What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Support for the Bubba Army Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in male grooming. Their fourth generation performance package absolutely changed the grooming game, along with their refined body wash to round out your hygiene routine. Join the nearly 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped for their shower time routine by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code Bubba. Have you smelled Manscaped's refined body wash, fellas? The ladies love their signature scent. You and your boys will be so fresh and so clean when you start off your self-care routine with the ultimate body wash. Keep the grooming game going with the Performance Package 4.0, and inside this package, you'll find the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker and nose trimmer, crop preserver and ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold all the goodies. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the weed whacker to chop your worst weeds up the top of your nose and ears. Nothing's worse than that nose hair. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with code Bubba at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code Bubba at manscaped.com. Keep your balls trimmed, fresh, and clean with Manscaped. Spice, is Mick ready to go?
Mick is ready to go.
I think he lives in Florida nowadays. Up in the panhandle, I think. Mick, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Let me clear up the geographic question. I was in Florida for like 5 years, but I've been back in Long Island for quite a while.
Really?
Yeah.
You just couldn't quite deal with all of us rednecks down here.
No, I like the rednecks. You know what? When I was the commissioner of WWE, I guess I was naive enough to think I was really the commissioner. and they had me doing so many appearances, especially when they had their restaurant, that I'd be taking off from Florida, at 6 p.m. the night before an 11 a.m. appearance. And I wouldn't be back for like 36 hours. So
the good thing about down here, Mick, is your money does go a hell of a lot further.
Oh, man. What kind of person works their entire career in the South? I lived in Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Texas, and I'm leaving out one state. Let me try that again. Tennessee, I left out. 15 years of the entire time I was working full-time, I was in the South. And then the moment I retire, I move back to New York, where it's far more expensive.
Far more expensive, and you had a hell of a run down here, kid. You know that.
I did have a good run. I did.
I mean, the South is what made you a zillionaire. Please.
I don't know about that, because when I was with WWE, we could have lived anywhere, but we liked the Panhandle. My wife and I drove by there. We saw the beach. We thought it was great, and as unlikely as it might seem, we had a pretty good gym there for 4 or 5 years, so I did have a good time all over the South.
Now, you know, Mick, I didn't know that you were born in Indiana.
That's true. Yeah, John Mellencamp and David Lee Roth. We were all born in the same hospital at different times.
Right there in Bloomington.
Yes.
Now, at what age did you move out of Bloomington and head over?
I was just a little kid. My dad was a student there, believe it or not, working on his doctoral thesis. So he was studying, and, I came along during that time.
So, you know, the thing about what people don't realize with Mick is that, you know, he's always played like, you know, Mankind and all these guys, but he's like real smart. I mean, like real. I mean, like some of his gimmicks always like been barbaric. And he's like the hardcore guy, but he's actually one of the smarter of the guys.
I mean, just being an author alone and writing that many books and being on the top of the New York Times bestsellers, I mean, that's quite an accomplishment, and doing it without a ghostwriter.
Hey, you know, that was a big thrill for me, is the fact I did it myself. But, the fact that people are surprised actually worked for me, because it doesn't matter how many books I've done, the bar is always set so low for me.
It's true, because you can just feel like, yeah, I wrote it myself, and everybody's like, what, you? You wrote it yourself?
No, the Beyond the Mat deal was actually, but that was actually, they followed you during your career, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, when Barry Blaustein, the director, started work on that, I was supposed to be the guy who had, like, had a little taste of mainstream success, which would have been in WCW,
right,
and was now back doing the independents. Because, it was never thought that Vince McMahon would see me as a WWE-type guy. So I guess I was fortunate that as filming progressed, I became you know, I had a different role to play.
Nothing against Vince, man, but Vince had you all wrong in the fact that, I mean, you know, maybe you weren't as polished as Christian or as Edge or some of the guys with a big push, but, I mean, probably one of the best money-making matches, feud was between you and Mark Undertaker. That was money, that feud.
Yeah, and I, you know, if I had to credit people other than Mr. McMahon, it would be Jim Ross for, you know, kind of tirelessly pushing for me. I guess, you know, for like 5 years, and also the fact that the Undertaker looked at me and thought, you know, I don't care, you know, physique-wise, if he's not as impressive as some people, he thought that that would be a good matchup, and it turned out, I told somebody, I said, never underestimate the power of the Undertaker.
Well, let me tell you something, Mark runs the show in the back, boy. I mean, you know that as well as I do. I mean, he's the most vested guy in the world, and I mean, he can get, not that Undertaker ever plays a card, but he can get stuff done. If he didn't like way something's going, and he doesn't go there very often, but he's just
that's the key. If you don't go there very often, you know, he's kind of a guy that speaks softly and carries a really big stick. So hey, you know what, just reminded me, did you know I actually wrote a letter back when you had that you know, the trouble and taking off the air,
right?
I actually wrote a letter to the O'Reilly Factor when I saw that thing on the air. I just thought, man, one kid, you know, one, or it was a kid who had it, who left it on the station.
Yeah,
maybe listening to rock and roll, and the next morning his dad turned on the radio. I have the story right.
Yeah.
And I was like, one guy, you know, one man can take down a, you know, a career, and fortunately it didn't work out that way. But at the time, I was I just thought that's really unfair.
See, I mean, that's the thing about me. And by the
I
way,
wrote in.
Thank you.
And of course, O'Reilly didn't highlight the
definitely not. It may have been too long.
How'd O'Reilly know how to work? I mean, you bring Mick in, right?
Sure.
You know, and you good cop, bad cop it all day. Let Mick be the heel and be the absurd, you know, crazed lunatic wrestling that's taking too many shots to the head, but he brings name value, right?
Sure.
And then O'Reilly could just get all hot in the whole nine yards, and Mick could even blast him in the hair with the chair. I mean, it would have been great stuff there.
I had the opportunity to go on his show, and I even agreed, and then I saw, man, I just... You know, with him, it's hit or miss, you know.
Yeah. Well, with him, you can't get your word in, because he'll turn your mic down, he'll overpower you, he'll cut you off, and you have no control over it.
The idea is, you only, whether or not you look good is entirely up to him, and it's possible, maybe even probable, we could have had a good conversation, because his producer said, no, Mr. O'Reilly respects you, he'll be... I've worked pretty hard to establish a good name, and I can make points and, you know, go, you know, point for point with just about anybody, but I can't do it if I'm playing by somebody else's rules.
Well, you got to control your own destiny. I mean, you got to be, you got to be calling the match, you know. You can't be out there taking orders from somebody. Now, let's talk about your next deal while you're on the air, and I'm really excited about that, because I've heard nothing good but good things on how Dixie Carter treats the talent and how good she is to people, and you're making a switch over to TNA to work for Dixie and the boys.
Yeah, I started a couple weeks ago, and she has been great, you know. I mean, Vince, you know, was great. He just handled things a little bit differently than Dixie. They're two completely different personalities.
Yeah, Dixie don't want to kill you. Exhausting. Dixie wants to give you a few days rest, but Vince wants you to do 955 appearances in a row.
Yeah, Vince, he's a pretty stern taskmaster. And I feel lucky, you know. I don't know if you guys have, you know, caught wind of the fact that my experience as an announcer wasn't all that, you know, it wasn't entirely bad, but there were parts of it I did not enjoy. And I wonder if the TNA opportunity had come up and I hadn't been announcing, whether I would have taken it, because I may have felt like I owe it to Vince to kind of stay and not work for the other guys. But you know, at a certain point, I was like, man, no, this is really not how, you know, a guy should be, you know, spoken to or dealt with. And then, so it made my decision to go and try something different a lot easier.
Well, but Dixie, they just got to let you be yourself. They just got to let you be yourself, because that's when you're the best, is when you're yourself.
You know what? Honestly, this is, I mean, I would, even if I didn't feel like it was going great, I would say positive things about it if I was, you know, if I was working for the company. It was my job to do it. But I would not say this unless it was true, which is, I'm having as much fun as I've had since like 99 and 2000, when I was the commissioner. because that, you know, they trust my judgment. I'm, you know, I'm allowed to come up with my own stuff. You know, on my way out there, it's like, wow, I get to say whatever I want, and I think that we can really make a difference.
Well, how are you feeling as far as like physically? I mean, you know, the rap on you for a long time. I'm sure you know about it. It's sort of like, okay, well, he's great, but then at times he'll just kind of space out because of all the bumps you've taken over your years. I mean, mentally, how are you feeling? Does that stuff still happen where you just kind of like space out?
No, you know what? I think that was directly like in 99. You know, there's that short-term and long-term difference in the memories. And, man, I was kind of taking a pounding there in 99 because I was up near the top of the card and my my knees and my back, you know, my neck were hurting. And I was like, man, I don't know. You know, I still felt the need to give people a good bang for their buck, and so I made the decision, like, hey, let's take some damage to the head, you know, that's a good idea. And you know, one of the best decisions I made, probably the best and most important one, was to leave when I did, leave full-time wrestling in early 2000, because I had no doubt that if I had stayed, you know, I would have made really good money for like another year or two, but I don't think we'd be having this conversation, or possibly any conversation.
Now, Mick, I didn't know. Now, did the reality show that you're, has that panned out?
You know what? It did not. But we'd had a chance a few years earlier, and we were always sitting there like wondering what would have happened. You know, it was, I thought, I don't know. You know, it's kind of, my kids are not at an age where they can, you know, make mature adult decisions about whether or not they want to be on TV. But I guess as a family, when the chance came about the second time, we were like, you know, there really is an upside, you know, if this works out. You know, there's a lot of upside. And you've seen guys, you know, I mean, even with very, you know, moderate ratings, people are seen as being huge stars because they've been on reality shows. So we had the crew from A&E come over for 8 days, and everybody felt like it was going well. 16 hours a day for 8 days, and the pilot, you know, I thought was really good, and right. You know, a lot of people in the business thought it was really good. But the knock on us was that we got along too well. And when I was approached about doing it, I said, you know, we're not the kind of family that, you know, like yells. You're not going to see great displays of, you know, anger. They said, well, you know, that those days are passe. We think people are ready for a different type of family, kind of like, you know, a very offbeat Huxtable family.
Right.
And I think in a few years you will see that type of family. But I think when push came to shove, they got nervous because no one had done it before and they weren't sure if there'd be an audience for, you know, a show that made people actually, you know, think a little bit. You know,
I got a message from Hulk. I got a message from my good friend Hulk Hogan. Be careful in those reality shows.
You know, I say this because I know you know Hulk, and I say that I'm not being, you know, funny about this at all, but I look at that and I just wonder, you know, whether or not he would make that same decision again, because I would argue that, you know, for as many positive things as that show did for him, in the end, it wasn't not a positive.
You know, Mick, he'd be the first to tell you firsthand, guy, you know, boy on boy, that it was not good for his family, and hindsight being, he wouldn't do it again. No way. It puts way too much light on your kids, especially if your kids are at that age where they're really impressionable and they can really get sucked into the business or the deal, and just...
I never knew Hulk that well, but I went out of my way a couple times to say, hey, you know, I'm really sorry for, the way the last few months have been going for you. And one of our fears was that if we did get the pilot, you know, if the pilot went ahead and now we're taping show number three, now if they come to us and they say, you know what, we need a little more conflict, can you guys like come up with something? But now that you're like, you know, vested in the success of the show, what choice would you have? And but to kind of do what they wanted. And at that point, you know, the show would no longer, you know, have any real basis in reality.
Because
so,
you're like three episodes in. You're like, well, we can't turn back, so we kind of got to do what they want us to do, and it's not what I want to do. And it's gonna, at the end of the day, then whether the kids start believing, okay, is Dad being a dick for real, or is Mom and Dad really mad at each other, or is it for the show, or what's going on?
Then you become a booker, and you got to come up with an angle of, you know, you find condoms in your kid's drawer, and then all of a sudden you take a chair bump, and he lands on a bunch of tacks. I mean, you're right. It causes like a downward spiral, and you never know where it's going to end.
So when we got the word that they they weren't going for it. Like, I was a little bit disappointed, but honestly, I was mostly relieved. And in this case, it didn't work out, and I have to believe it's for the best.
We, I know that you're, you know, with obviously TNA and Dixie, and kind of back with one of your rivals, and that was Kurt Angle. You and him had a good deal back at in Vince's stuff, and I think you worked a little bit with Christian as well, and both of those guys doing well for Dixie.
Yeah, man. You know, Kurt and I had, and Christian, you know, and the stuff I did with Edge and Christian was, you know, some of my favorite stuff in WWE, even though it wasn't in-ring stuff. And I was just starting, you know, Kurt was just starting out as I was leaving. And I remember when I proposed doing a tag team with Kurt, people thought I was crazy because it was like, no, this guy does not have it. You know, like, Kurt was a guy who was seen as having the technical stuff down pat, but that he was not going to be a successful character at all. And so me suggesting a role for Kurt was, you know, seen as being, you know, fairly stupid. And he and I were just joking around about that. Like, man, look at how he's developed. He's one of the great characters, like, in the history of the business.
Well, Hogan wrestled him one time, and he said they locked up, and he had to get out of the ring and say, you need to slow down, brother, because you're way too stiff. You're going to kill me on here.
Oh, man, he's so intense. And you know what? I mean,
I guess he said, slow down, Jesus, you're killing me. Slow down.
Yeah, he's. I was ringside for his match with Jeff Jarrett at the last TNA pay-per-view, which I thought was a great pay-per-view. I mean,
right.
Maybe I'm biased now, but I think I know a good show when I see one, and
absolutely.
I thought that was a really good show. And man, it's just his intensity is off the page.
And the bad thing about it is if he gets a hair up his ass and he wants to take your shoot style, I mean, what are you going to do about it? You know,
well, you know, I talked about this in the last book, so I was about to say, about to tell this story, and I was like, maybe I shouldn't, but I did. It is in writing that the last time I was in the ring with Kurt, Mr. McMahon had a talk with Kurt before he went out there, telling him to take me down continually and eat me up, and opted not to share the plan with me, you know?
Really?
It's like, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like dirty pool. And I, when I saw Vince, you know, if it had been 2000, 2001, when I had a little more anger in me, I really would have let him have a little bit of it. But I was just more hurt. And I was like, Vince, did you know I had 3 partially torn ligaments in my knees? Like, oh, I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
You know, any one of those things, you know, I'm kind of on borrowed time. You know,
I mean, that's kind of crappy. And making the fact that he gets with Kurt and says, just continually take him down, single leg style. And you're like, what? I mean, that's not what a, can you imagine you're out there in the ring saying, hey, brother, this ain't what we talked about.
It's not good TV either, you know?
Yeah, come on.
It's not good TV. And then Kurt was in the ring, I just like pound, like, you know, like you said, you know, he gets really intense, and man, it was like.
Were you telling him to take it easy?
You're like, slow down. What's going on, kid?
I was telling him this is the hardest I've ever been hit in my life.
Now, do you wish wrestling was more, some of the kayfabe was still left in it? I mean, it seems to me like everything is so exposed these days between the internet and everything like that. Do you wish it would go back to the old school where it was just, you know, everybody kind of just had their own secrets?
You know, in a way, you know, yeah, in a way I do. There are some things, like, I saw Hulk's, you know, his celebrity wrestling, and I thought it was pretty fun, but it just seems weird to have the announcers explaining what the guys
that was
are
me, did
to
you know
do.
That? Hey, I was the announcer.
Was that you?
Yeah, that was me.
I didn't know that. I mean, but it, like I said, it, you know, it's you can't put the genie back in the bottle now,
but in
a way, It made life a lot easier and more profitable for me because all of a sudden I was no longer the guy that sucked. You know, like,
yeah, it showed
people
the genius.
Understood, wow, he takes a beating with style.
And I remember, back in the day, man. Remember back in the day, Mick, where the baby faces would have one locker room. The heels would have it, and then the ref would go back and talk to about the spots. He would go back and forth, and because you couldn't talk, and then if you went out that night, you still couldn't associate with the babies or the heels, could you?
Oh no, and not only that, I was just. Mentioned to somebody earlier today that, you know, I remember having my job threatened when I was in Tennessee because I was, you know, talking to a girl in a wheelchair, you know, and I got lectured about how that's not what, the heels do.
Oh, man.
And that was always, hard for me to pretend to be, bad once I was outside the ring, but that's the way.
Hogan was working for this guy. I forget who was booking the old Florida territory, and the babies and the heels would ride together into the show. If he used to say, if you guys get in a car wreck, make sure the heels stick at the accident and the babies run. I don't want to see you guys together.
Yeah, some of that stuff. When I was in WCW and they tried to, like I was talking about putting the genie back in the bottle, like they tried to halfway stuff it back in there by not allowing the guys to stay in the same hotels, or if he showed up at a gym and, you know, if I was a babyface and a heel walked in, you're supposed to leave, you know, and they didn't book people on the same flights. It was kind of ridiculous, you know.
Well, in the day and age of the internet where people can, you know, find out that these two are best friends and, you know, you guys were at each other's barbecue this past weekend and what have I mean, there is no more of that left. But I think that the industry has also done a good job of making it sports. Vince polished that turd up back in the day by saying that it's, you know, hey, it's sports entertainment. And my favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get when you're talking through Mint Mobile. I mean, I can't believe that I've been living some other life with all this scratchy mobile when I can get crystal clear and the best mobile through Mint Mobile. And I can do it all for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. I can afford this. How much have I been paying on my other plan? Probably getting gouged. But it's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan. I mean, I'm talking jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. Say goodbye to all that nonsense. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Bubba. That's mintmobile.com/BUBBA. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Bubba. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. You know, our demographics are as such, and, you know, we're out here having a good time. It's very athletic, but, you know, people do get hurt, but we kind of know what's going on out there. I think Vince is the one that kind of helped polish it up a little
bit. Yeah, the term sports entertainment really is brilliant when you think about it. I mean,
man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
The way that he did that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no question. And I always felt, and, you know, the whole writing of this last book was, you know, kind of based on the assumption that what happened behind the scenes was at least as interesting as what was going on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I was writing the first book, you know, I was being very honest, but I really felt that people would respect what we did more after reading it, you know. And I hate to be a guy that gives away secrets, but I do think, you know, that to the general public, we were a bunch of idiots, you know, before that, you know, current era began. And now people do see what we do as being, you know, difficult, and they do see us as being, you know, good performers as opposed to, you know, fakers. And I think it's greatly cut down on the number of fights that wrestlers' kids get in school trying to defend their dad's honor, yeah.
Now, have you talked to Vince, or has he made any contact with you with regards to you going to work for Dixie, or is he kind of over that? You know, Vince is a control freak, you know that.
No.
And, yeah. I mean...
you know what? I mean, he knew. I announced for, I guess, 4.5 months, and the first month was like a honeymoon period, and
right.
He knew after that, for the last 3.5 months, that I wasn't happy there. And when I made it pretty clear that I wasn't going to be re-signing, and then when word leaked out that I was going to TNA, I thought, man, I better call him, you know, because out of respect, you know, you got to call him and let him know that is
right.
True. And he and I had, you know, it was a good talk. It was a very difficult talk. When I told my wife I have to call Vince, you know, she was waiting for me when I came upstairs, you know, and I was like a little choked up, you know. He was said a couple of nice things, and I told Vince he'd been one of the most important people in my life, which is true. And then it was like the day after that they took my profile down from.
Oh yeah, I've seen over the years, man. I've seen Terry and Vince. Get, you know, it's honestly, God, it's like almost they're almost like dating because it's so on again, off again, and they use each other. I mean, they really do. Terry needs a quick payday, he goes back. Vince needs a little shot in the arm, he goes back. But over the years, I've been privy to some of their conversations, and Vince is the smoothest son of a bitch. He'll come in, he'll pay some homage to your family. He'll have a whole little rap sheet as to how the kids are doing. Mick, he'll like, you know, pay like, you know, oh, how's the kids doing? And then he'll like 3 or 4 minutes prop you up, and then blam, he gets right to you.
Yeah, he will do what's you know, he'll do what's best for business. And there's from what I've seen, there's only been a couple instances where guys have really burned their bridges. And you know, being that, you know, on my last couple shows, I did I did the right thing, as they say, for the company. I don't think I burned a bridge. If I did, I mean, that's unfortunate. But on the list of things, you know, Vince's acceptance of me and is important, but maybe not as important as, you know.
Oh, I don't think you burned a bridge at all, man.
No,
by all means, I mean you left.
And even I find some of the moves complimentary, like taking my profile down immediately. I think was a compliment. You know, pulling me from the video game, I guess, along with Savage was a compliment. And from what guys told me, the Dudleys and Kevin Nash said the day that I left, they both got calls offering them big bumps in pay to join. So, you know, even though they didn't express it to me, apparently that they did feel like it was a loss when I left.
Oh, absolutely, it's a loss. I mean, it really is. Yeah, what do you do? Like, let me ask you a question, Nick. Mick, when your check would come back, you know, the shizits, what would you do? What recourse do you have? Do you go to Jim Ross first? Do you go right to Vince? Do you go to Shane?
You know what? I mean, I never went to Shane. I would call Jim Ross. I think it's kind of like the wrestling equivalent to working the umpires in baseball. You make your argument, and you may not get a bump on that check, but it may... It may pave the way for a little bit more down the road. And you know what? I mean, I remember at the Royal Rumble in 2000 when Triple H and I had a match that we did numbers equivalent to what Undertaker and Austin had done. And I knew the payoff was not equivalent to what they had gotten.
Right.
And I had my facts about why we should get the same. And Vince ended up bumping me and not Triple H, which I felt bad about, although I think it's probably come back, you know, a dozen times or more for Triple H. And Vince said he's going to be here for a long time. And he actually felt good. He said, you know, he's going to do fine. And that was like almost like his going away present for me. But, you know, I did go to him with what I thought was a valid argument, and he was responsive some of the time.
The thing about Vince, though, Brent, is he'll hold your check for 90 days, though. He holds it for 90 to 120 days to get that big interest deal, and then he scratches off to you. Usually have done two more pay-per-views sometimes before you get the one that he's 90 days in. Am I right about that?
What was real harrowing for me was when I had the book royalties.
Right.
And I knew they were going to be, you know, bigger than anything I'd ever received in my life. This is in, you know, when the book came out in 99, but I wasn't going to get paid for it until the middle of 2000.
Right.
And, man, I felt a lot of pressure, you know, because if I voided my contract, I was, you know, officially voiding, you know, my royalty and my rights to the royalties. So for like 6 months, I really sweated it out, thinking, man, you know, if I were to, you know, end up, you know, leaving in a bad way at any time, you know, I'm forfeiting more money than I ever dreamed of. So it is kind of, you know, it's kind of strange that it kind of, you know, your fate kind of hangs in the balance there for a few months. But I guess compared to, you know, the troubles that, you know, people are having, you know, in this economy and working real jobs, what we did was really not all that. The work conditions are actually pretty good.
The funniest payday story I ever heard, Brent, was when Hogan got paid for WrestleMania 3 with Andre. And, you know, Andre was, you know, at that point, you know, Mick, he was the end-all be-all. You know that.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you know, he ran the show. He'd tell Vince what to do. And so they were going to pass the torch that night. You know, obviously it was huge. The numbers were huge, the biggest ever. And so Terry made more. I don't know if you know this or not, Mick, and it's probably something I shouldn't talk about, but I think Terry has talked about it on my other show. He actually made about $400,000 or $500,000 more than Andre did.
Wow.
But Andre couldn't know that. So when Vince gave the checks, he made sure that Andre saw Terry's, what he thought was Terry's check. And then Terry got something on the backside. But Terry's like, until the day Andre died, I was so afraid to tell him. I could never say a word because he would have killed me. Because I guess Andre was just Oh, my God, he was mean. I mean, not in a bad way, but he made guys. I mean, when he broke you into the business, man, he made you pay your dues. And I guess he hated Macho Man for some reason. They'd be out playing cards and stuff like that, and Macho Man would walk into the room, and he'd go, Terry, make him leave. Did you ever work with him at all, Mick?
Yeah, I did a couple times in 1991 in Japan when he was, you know, really at the, you know, tail end of his career.
Right.
And, you know, when he dropped that elbow, he would drop it in sections, you know, like he'd almost like lean down and his knee would kind of touch the ground and then his hip. And then it, still, you know, a few hundred pounds of body weight would crush your sternum. And whereas it may have seemed laughable in the U.S., over there in Japan, because they're, you know, big respecters of tradition, that
right.
the whole crowd would be like, whoa, like, you know, we get this incredible response. So, yeah, we just had a couple matches. He teamed up with Dory Funk Jr. And, yeah, but, you know, it's really cool to you know, to wrestle one of the legendary guys. And I've said this before, so I'm not repeating it. I'm not making it up just because you're, you know, Hulk's friend. But, you know, the two guys that I wished I could have wrestled and never did was Bruiser Brody, which obviously can't happen.
Died in Puerto Rico.
And Hogan, because it's hard to say you completely did it all without having a, you know, a match with him.
Well, Hogan said one time when wrestling was just first breaking into the territory and Vince was getting on the cable deal, they went to Kansas City, and that was big Harley Race territory. And Harley, remember Hogan was taking a poop, and Harley broke down the stall and was going to kill Terry because he was supposed to get the strap that night, and then he ended up was going to burn the ring down, remember? Set the ring on fire. And Hogan's like, man, I was scared. I went to Vince Sr. It's like, I'm really scared of this guy.
I was scared of him too.
You had a big feud with Harley Race, didn't you?
Vader was Harley's guy, and my big breakthrough is, you know, first real good guy turn I got, although done it in Tennessee, was Vader had done a number on me, and I was going to come back to the crowd to get some revenge with a scoop shovel. And Harley saw me, like, practicing with the shovel, you know, backstage, you know, like, I don't know if I was stomping my foot, but I was obviously trying to figure out how I'm going to throw this, you know, this steel shovel without actually, you know, crushing somebody. And Harley comes up, and he doesn't tell Vader he says this, but he points to Vader, he goes, if you don't hit him when we come back here, I'm hitting you. And so he kind of sends Vader, you know, not the best thing to send Vader out there to face a guy who's got the fear of Harley in him. And, I mean, I swung that shovel like my life depended on it. And, you know, guys were going, you know, a couple guys were talking about how when that happened, a group of guys were going to run out from backstage. I think it was in Montgomery, Alabama. And you had guys just flat out refusing to run out and, you know, and try to stop me because I was, like, really...
Now, when you were breaking in some of the independents, Hogan used to tell us that they'd pay you like 25 extra for a blade job, and like, I mean, did you ever see it like fragmented into like that where it was?
No,
like,
I was never high enough on the card where that would even matter, you know. 25 in some cases would have been almost tripling my take,
yeah.
You know. No, I. You know what? You know, by that point, the 2020 expose had gone on there, and the
right.
only time. You know, guys were bleeding was when it seemed to, you know, make some kind of sense.
I think you might have dropped more blood than anybody in the industry. I mean, that used to just be part of your daily salary. I mean, you never, if you would have gotten 25 extra for a blade job, you'd be retired by now.
Honestly, you know, when we were in Tennessee and the match were getting kind of grisly, I realized that I could probably make more money donating my blood to the Red Cross than
I'm telling
you. Spilling it on arena floors.
Well, Mick, let me tell you something. As you get updates and you got press releases and new books and whatever action figures and sock pep, whatever you got going on, man, consider us. And more importantly, man, I never knew that you wrote a letter on our behalf. That means a lot to me, Mick, and I can't tell you how much, again, thank you for that, buddy.
Hey, you're welcome. I thought it was a bad deal and tried to do something about it.
Hey, Mick, let's keep in touch, maybe even on Thursday.
Hey, thanks, Bubba. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mick.
All right,
bye-bye now.